Golf Smarter number 202 for October 27, 2009.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.
The PGA Tour Awards with comedian Matty B.
This is Golf Smarter. Sharing tips and insights from golfers and golf professionals to help lower your score. It's worked for your host, Fred Green.
Welcome, and thanks for checking out the newest episode of Golf Smarter. Okay, you've known me long enough to know that the PGA Tour is not something I cover very much because, as a podcast listener myself, I know how easy it is to fall behind a few weeks. Generally, that's why I like to keep the content of Golf Smarter as evergreen as possible. Except, of course, for contests. But this year's majors were so compelling, so interesting, because of how all four of them threw in a huge surprise at the very end that I thought it would be fun to do a recap. But a Golf Smarter recap with a different point of view. So many of the Golf Smarter members have written to me about how much they enjoyed the show back in July with comedian Matty B that I figured he'd be the perfect person to give his take on the 2009 PGA Tour season. But before we get started with Matty, I just wanted to remind you that we have a great deal going on right now for our U.S. listeners with ClickGear. If you're a walker when you play, then at some point you should seriously consider using a pushcart. Come on. Swinging a golf club is hard enough on your body, but carrying a golf bag for 4 hours is really tough. Two-wheel carts are nice, but then you're pulling all the time and can never let go. But a three-wheel ClickGear push cart is the best solution to all of these issues. And the ClickGear is the best model on the market because it folds up to such a subcompact size that it takes up barely any room in the trunk of your car. You can find the ClickGear all over the web for $199, but as a Golf Smarter member, you can get one for only $179, and that includes tax and shipping. That's $179 total. Unfortunately, the offer is only good if you're having it shipped inside the United States, but go to golfsmarter.com at the Golfers Mart and use the coupon code PUSHME. P-U-S-H-M-E, push me, two words, and save big on the ClickGear three-wheel pushcart today. Six colors to choose from, too. Whether it's for you or a gift, take advantage of the great deal now. All right, let's bring him on and see what he has to say about 2009. Welcome back to the Golf Smarter Podcast, Matty B.
Fred, this is the highlight of my golfing season every time I'm on.
This is only the second time. It wasn't the highlight when you and I got a chance to play together?
That was incredible, and I can't believe we pulled it together. You know how you talk to your buddies about golfing?
Oh, of course.
And you go, oh, definitely going to do it, definitely going to do it. And
then None of my friends will play with me anymore. I don't know why I'm still friends with them.
The weeks go by and it kind of turns into like the details get in the way. You know, it's like, well, I'm coming in on a Saturday and that course isn't really near where, and then you end up not playing. But the fact that we pulled it together from 3,000 plus miles away is awesome.
Yeah, it was incredible. But, you know, it's not so much the details of the course that gets in the way anymore. You have little kids. It's life that gets in the way. And I think that's the thing about Golf Smarter listeners, that they like getting this information that we're able to provide to help keep their head in the game, but they don't get to play as much as they'd like to.
It's so true. And I got to tell the listeners one thing, that Fred is a great person to play with because you've ingested so much. No. You don't, first of all. You don't. But you've ingested so much knowledge that isn't swing mechanic knowledge, but I'll give a tangible example to listeners. I was having a problem. I forget what it was, pulling it left. I think I was pulling everything left. And I, at one point I said, well, I've been pulling the ball, but I can't even say the word. And I wouldn't say left. And I said, I can't say it. And you said, man, after like three holes of me not saying left, I would say, you know, the L word. Mm-hmm. And you said, you're giving that way too much power. Just say it. Say, you know, left, like, my God, let it go. And boy, wasn't that a great lesson? And I was able to let it go, you know, and you were right. I was, you know, like people say, I can't say the shank, the S word. And I think it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy when you let it get that powerful, that you can't say the friggin' word, you know?
So funny, because as you say that, I remember the hole that you finally let it go, and yep. it was an uphill par five.
Yes.
Right? And you had to yep. hit over the top of the crest, and you crushed the ball, and it went dead straight. And I hit one. I lost my ball on the tee yeah. shot. And I remember seeing a huge snake as I was driving around
that's right,
looking
that's
for
right.
my ball.
That's right. Did we see some? We saw some wildlife out there. I remember
we
you taking
did.
A picture.
That turtle. Else too. A turtle.
Turtle. Yeah.
I was see walking,
the wildlife.
Oh, I love the wildlife. But I played terribly that day. That was a tough. And wasn't it? It was a 9-hole course that we went around twice.
That's right.
And it was yep. wet, and the rough was thick, and oh, man. Well, I was playing with rented clubs. Well, yeah.
I think
let's talk
I think
about the 2009 theory, season and my rented clubs, right? I got my hole-in-one.
I think in theory, in a 9-hole course, you're supposed to play it better the second time around. We actually regressed.
Yes, we did.
Which is odd.
Without drinking.
That's right. No drinking.
No drinking. I had a wedding to go to that night.
That's right.
Everyone's going, where are you going? Ah, Maddie's here. I'm going to play with my friend Maddie.
Who the hell's Maddie, they said.
But enough of our 2009 season. I thought it would just be a whole lot of fun to do. I don't like talking about the PGA Tour because it's dated information. But let's recap the 2009 PGA Tour because it was so much fun. It was so interesting to see how each of the majors, and I don't want to go over the 30 different or 40 different tournaments that happened during the year, but the four majors were so intriguing. They had such great storylines and finished with huge surprises. The Sundays on all four of them were so great. I thought, who better to talk about the recap of the season than my comedian buddy, Matty B.
Jimmy Roberts?
Oh, wait a minute. I got to tell you a quick one. So I'm standing by the 15th hole on Sunday at the Ryder's Cup. No, at the President's Cup.
President's Cup.
Yeah. Just recently at Harding Park with my little press credential. I'm walking around on Sunday with my Golf Smarter microphone, and Jimmy Roberts walks by. And I went, Jimmy! From the crowd, right? I'm standing at the ropes, but behind the ropes like I'm like some geek. It's like, Jimmy! And he's like, hey. I went, and I pointed the microphone fob. I go, Fred Green, Golf Smarter Podcast. And he goes, hey, don't have time. Great to see you. And he walked away. And that was as close as I got to Jimmy Roberts. But it felt like, and he's probably the nicest guy in the world and does this for everybody, but it felt like he knew who I was for that one moment.
No, he, you know, honestly, I know the guy, and if he... Trust me, he didn't have time because he would have stopped. He's a great guy.
Oh, no. He was doing interviews. It had just finished. Yeah. The final grouping had just shook hands. And,
right.
and he was like, he had to run. I mean, he was in a golf cart. He was being
right.
driven away from in a golf cart.
Right. He probably had like Ebersol in his ear going, get to the 18th right now.
Yeah, that's the beauty of doing interviews over Skype and on the phone is that no one ever sees who you are and there's no relationship. But it was neat to have him make me feel like he knew who I was.
Okay, so besides Jimmy Roberts, who would be better at breaking down the year than me, I will gladly step in his place.
I think that he would be very serious and be the strict reporter that he is, but that's not what I'm looking for.
Well, in fact, I kind of, as you know, like on my show, I do the Maddies, and so I've kind of done that for the 2009 PGA season. I have a list of awards here that I'd like to go through. And if your listeners agree or disagree, they can, because I know some of these are going to be controversial. Let's get right into it. We have the Matty for Shot of the Year. And I'm going to give that to Y.E. Yang, Fred, for his 3 hybrid to 8 feet when he beat Woods at the PGA. An amazing shot. I thought it was a shot of the year. I mean, I don't think it's debatable.
No, I would have liked to have had a choice and see if I would have agreed with you, but it's like in this category, you have these, you know, 3 or 5 different shots, but really there was only one. And it's so interesting because we just talked recently on the show, episode number 200 with Jesse Ortiz, and I brought that shot up with him, and he said if he had a 3-iron in his bag, because we were talking about how hybrids are now in so many different tour players' bags. And he said if he had a 3-iron in his bag, he never would have made that shot. He could only have made that shot with a hybrid.
That's true. I agree with that. And but the only thing I don't like about it is just the ring to it. It doesn't have the same ring. Like, you know, you hear great things like Jack's one iron to win, or like, you know, Snead rips driver off the deck. Then you go, Yee's hybrid three. Just doesn't sound the same.
Do you think it sounds wimpy?
Yeah, kind of.
Hybrids are wimpy?
Yeah, yeah, a little bit. A little bit. A little bit.
You're such a stud.
All right, there we go.
Wait. Do you carry any hybrids?
Of course. I have like three.
I rest my case, Your Honor.
The Matty for worst shot of the year.
Worst shot of the year. And in this category, we have...
I didn't... Well, you know.
Okay, fine.
I could have made up choices, but it was a time thing.
No. Worst shot... First in the category is that my shot that I had on that par five going uphill.
How did you know you won?
Yeah, right. No, we're talking about the tour.
Oh, right.
Well,
okay, the tour. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with... Now, I think the obvious choice here is Kenny Perry at the Masters, his S-word. But I don't want to do it to him. I don't want to kick a guy while he's down. So I went with Patty Harrington on the par three, also the PGA, same tournament, on the par three when he went on to make an eight when he was in contention. And I just thought that was one of the worst. Because he had been, you know, he's every time on the tee box this year, he was in contention.
Yep.
And standing on the tee box, and you knew you're about to watch a guy pull left harder than, you know, Obama at an ACLU rally or me. So I thought it was a terrible year driving for him, and that was one of the worst shots I saw all year.
Yeah, and he was in contention. I mean, he was right there, and then just – wasn't it 2 weeks in a row that he had an eight on number 15?
Yes, that's exact. Yep.
That was so bizarre.
That poor Patty, I guess.
Yeah, and that's something, you know, we would do.
Exactly.
He's not supposed
to do that.
He needs
a little more work with the mental guru that he works with.
Right.
And, his name.
And looking at the statistics and, you know, the top five of the tour statistics and stuff, he didn't show up very much.
Patty, get back on it. From one Irishman to another. Okay.
I just got to clarify one more thing before you go on.
Yes.
We're only talking about the PGA Tour, not the Champions, not the Nationwide, not the LPGA, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, fine.
As far as I know.
I just don't want to insult anybody by just being not fully committed to every PGA professional golfer.
Gotcha.
That's out there.
Gotcha. So, I was pretty drunk when I wrote this, though, so you never know. Here we go. The Matty for the most underrated story of the year. I'm going to give it to Double D, David Duval, for his performance at the U.S. Open, his comeback on the final day specifically. If you remember, he was in the hunt, and then he started the first two holes terrible. And then the third hole, he buried his ball in the bunker on the third on that par three and made a terrible score. And he was done. Anyone else, especially given what he's gone through the last few years, would have been done for the day. The guy fights back and has a top 10 finish at the U.S. Open. I mean, no one could have seen that coming, I don't think, and I thought it was just the most – and no one talks about it now, but I thought it was the story of the year for me, the most underrated story of the year.
Yeah, it was pretty remarkable because – and again, we've talked about it on the show because – this is name-dropping, Fred. Jeez. We had Dr. Michael Larden, and he has been working with David Duval as his mental coach.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on earlier, and we talked about working with Duval and what that took. And what an amazing story that was, that he's been, you know, just disappeared for years.
Yes.
Duval was gone, and there he was tied for second at the end. With Mickelson and Ricky Barnes. And Mickelson was supposed to win the whole thing, and Lucas Glover comes through and wins the U.S. Open.
Amazing. And, you know, isn't that a lesson for life, too? Like, here's a guy who was untouchable, the best player to put his hands on a golf club for a period of time.
Duval,
and then
no question.
Yeah. And then he became almost unable to hit a ball.
Yeah.
And it's just amazing that he's been able to not just do it on that day, but just to still golf and to still go out there and put himself out there and compete. I think it's completely inspirational. I wish more people talked about him.
Well, I think that part of the problem is that he made such a quick return and then disappeared again.
True.
If I'm looking here at the 2009, he played in 19 events. He made only six cuts.
Yeah.
And only had one top 10 finish.
Yeah,
And only one top 25 finish. His scoring average of 72.1 And made just now this is interesting. On the money list, it says that David Duvall in 2009 made $623,000. To a lot of people, that would be 4 or 5 years of revenue, of income.
Yep.
But to somebody on the tour that has, and this is the thing that I got into a conversation with somebody that people don't realize about professional golfers. They think, oh my God, they make so much money. And yeah, they do. There's no question that some of them can make a lot of money. But here's a guy who was top of his game, made $623,000. He's got to cover all of his expenses.
Absolutely.
Right? Most Absolutely. Professional athletes, you know, they're carte blanche everywhere they go, and they get a salary, and they don't have to pay for anything.
All that stuff's paid for. Yeah, right.
Right.
All
you got to, what is it, 10% to your caddy? There's $60,000 right there for him. And then he's got to pay for all his travel. And they don't fly commercial airlines most of the time because it's just too difficult, and their hotels and their trainers and their, you know, everything else. And a lot of them, hopefully they get money from manufacturers and stuff, and they get free clubs, but they, gosh, $600,000 is not a lot of money. Actually, 2008, $114,000 he made.
It's going to be real interesting to see what he does, because I think that was the final year of his exemption for being a top 50 all-time money winner, which was a, let's say, 10-year exemption or something. Mm-hmm. And then I know he was quoted as saying at one time, I won't play if I have to do, you know, in other words, if I have to do another exemption, I'd rather go back. I'm not going to do that. And then he got a medical, a hard luck exemption because his wife had a bad pregnancy or something, you know, personal life type of exemption. So it's going to be interesting to see if he ever is faced with having to go back to Q school. Is he going to continue the fight?
Right, right. Well, it's just so interesting because his career totals, I'm sorry, I keep going back to this money thing, but it's just so fascinating to look at these statistics on the website where, you know, 2009, $623,000, which, again, isn't a lot of money, and I'll compare that in just a second. But and I went 623 the year before, 114. 2007, $71,945. I mean, that would be that would be a great year for a podcaster, but
yeah, like a teacher, you know, or something.
Right?
Yeah.
No, his 2005, that's more podcaster money. 2005, his money list, $7,630.
Amazing. I almost made that much on the PGA Tour.
Well, you worked for NBC. Yeah, I would hope that in a couple
true.
Of minutes that year.
All right, so he was my most underrated story of the year. My most overrated story of the year is a duo.
Oh, a tie? We have a tie?
Yeah, well, it's a couple. It's a couple. I got okay. Chris Evert, Greg Norman.
Mm.
Now, you know,
they're not together anymore, right?
Exactly. Now, here's the thing. Since he did what he did at the British Open, you know, you saw more puff pieces on these two than I could my gag reflexes could handle. Now we find out that these two, you know, super A-plus type personalities are separating, and you're watching the President's Cup the other day. And speaking of J-Roe, Jimmy Roberts, they make Jimmy Roberts break in during the President's Cup with this breaking news about their separation, as if, you know, we found Bin Laden hiding in the snack shack at Harding Park. You know, Jimmy Roberts, J-Roe's an Emmy winner, people, okay? This isn't, you know, this is Jimmy Roberts at the President's Cup. This isn't Mario Lopez on Extra. I think I've had enough of Chrissy and Greg. I'm glad to see him go. Totally overrated story. I think he'll be able to pick up the pieces on his Learjet, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. See, what is she going to do? We know he's got all these businesses, but what is she going to do now? Oh, my. You know what? You're right. It's an overrated story. We don't need to go into it.
There you go. There you go.
We're done.
Okay. The Maddie for Biggest Crybaby. Again, another President's Cup story. I'm going to give it to Robert Allenby.
Why?
I don't know if you saw this after losing to AK. He complained that Anthony Kim went out till like 4 a.m. and called him the tour's next John Daly. And I was thinking, you know, if you beat the kid, then you can say something and you're, you know, you're like a concerned elder statesman. But when you lose to him and then you're complaining about his personal habits, you're kind of now treading into bitter old guy territory. You know, you probably shouldn't say anything. And that leads right into the next category, which is the Maddie for Best Comeback Line. Or also I call it the Good For Him Award, Anthony Kim, who responded to Allenby's crying with, quote, maybe he should practice more. which I thought, yeah, yeah,
snap.
Yeah, from a 20-something-year-old kid. So
is he over? Is he over 21 yet, Anthony Kim?
Barely, if he is. Yeah, he's probably 23 or 22. Well, yeah.
Well, listen, being on the tour, he probably doesn't get much time to go to San Francisco, and I just have a feeling he had a lot of fun while he was here.
No doubt. And, you know, he should. You know, maybe he should. Good for him.
Yeah. It's the end of the season. Dude, relax. This doesn't
That's
even
it.
Do you know what these guys get for winning the President's Cup?
A cup?
Uh-huh. I got a radio for showing up and with a press credential. I mean, there's no financial gain in this. They have nice little, they get nice bags that have, you know, a night with their name embroidered in the United States and all that. So they get bags and clothes, you know, but so.
Exactly. They're like, get me to the Ryder Cup and let's end this.
Oh, it's pride. Oh. It's all about pride.
Yeah.
It's all about the pride. Yes, it's all for your country.
Here we go.
But wait, one more thing. I did notice, yes. And I was Twittering on the Thursday of President's Cup, and the one thing I did notice after he finished, Anthony Kim was standing over by the 18th green when the final shot. Oh man, that final putt. There was some. Did you see that one on Thursday?
It did.
And there was a little gamesmanship going on. Because it looked like, I'm trying to remember, who are the players there on that last hole on the 18th? He had an 18-inch putt to go, and it looked like he was going to be conceded by
is it O'Hare?
Retief Goosen, wasn't it?
Goosen.
Goosen looked like he walked across the line, not over the line, but he walked behind the line.
So close, right?
Right, of the hole as it was being set up for the shot. And I think it was Leonard that was setting up his shot.
He took
off his hat, walked over to Justin Leonard's partner, and then put his hat back on and started talking to him. It looked like he was conceding it at that point, but he didn't. And then Leonard missed the putt. So while this was all going on, and they only showed the replay of missing the putt, but not the gamesmanship, I thought that was really kind of tacky. There's an award for you. But Anthony Kim was standing over with all the different players waiting for this final putt. And he had his little iPhone earphones on, his iPod ear. And I was thinking, do you think Anthony Kim might possibly be listening to Golf Smarter?
Hey, there's a chance.
No, there wasn't. No, there's not.
I think he was listening to Lady Gaga more likely.
I hadn't planning where he was going to go until 4 o'clock in the morning.
Damn right. Go AK. Good for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, here we go. The Matty for best proof that there is no God, or as I also like to call it, the Bill Maher Award. This goes to Tom Watson for his putt on 18 at the British Open. You know, I can't remember a more crushing thing in golf. I'm really trying to think of him pushing that putt. I mean, he stuck that iron when all the pressure is on him, great drive, and then he sticks the iron, and it just runs off the back. He's going to get up and down from there 90% of the time. 90% of the time.
It was like an 8-footer, right?
Yeah.
And
just the way he missed it, too, was like a Matty B putt. I'm like, really? It was just so crushing to get that close for him and to watch that. That was tough.
That was so interesting 4 days of watching, because after the first day, they were like, you know, all the pundits. I love pundits. I love, you know, speculation on this stuff. Go, you know, it's like betting on golf is the most ridiculous thing you can possibly do.
Crazy.
And all these guys after the Thursday going, oh, Tom Watson will never last. He just doesn't have it. There's no way he's going to do it. And then after Friday, yeah, this is great. Oh, it's so
cute.
Exciting.
Yeah, it's cute.
Cute. But there's no way. He'll never make it to Sunday. Mm-hmm. And then it's Saturday, and Tom Watson's still in the lead. And they're like, wow. He might be able to do it. And he went all the way till the very last shot.
I'm telling you, that iron he hit, was it 8-iron that he went with? And just rolled over the back. I said to my father, we were watching together, he just stuck that. That swing was perfection. I mean, he did everything right except for one putt. That's the reality. He did everything right in that tournament except for one putt.
Yeah. I'm just curious, in your best Boston accent, what did your dad say when he missed the putt?
You know, Fred, I can't say.
Oh, please do. I'll bleep it if I have to. Come on. This is a members-only show. Let's go for it.
You know what it was, honestly? If I'm he was so – he got so caught up in it as a six – I think they're the exact same age, my father and him. How old's Watson?
Wasn't he about to turn 60 or something?
Yeah. So my dad's – I think they have a birthday in the same month. My dad might be a year older, so a 60 or 61-year-old man. And when he missed it, he went – he fucking pushed it.
Yeah.
He pushed it. And he didn't even yell. He was just crushed.
Yeah.
Well, almost like I thought he might. You know, like that was the emotion. Like I thought he might and he did. And he was just, he was crushed.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people across the country, I think a lot of weekend golfers got a lot of inspiration out of that. And then they just got let down. And then Kenny Perry at the Masters, you know, if that could prove that if there is a God, he might hate old people, because that was almost bad to watch. My God, I remember I thought it was tough to watch the old people swim with the alien pods and cocoon, but watching Kenny Perry shank that shot at the last day of the Masters in the playoff hole was, oh my God, what a tough year for the elders, for the seniors.
Yeah. Oh, and he's not even a senior officially yet. He's still only 49.
True. True. But us young guns, Fred, you know, anything over 40 seems old to me.
Hey.
Just kidding, bud.
You really did just drop the first F-bomb on Golf Smarter, didn't you? But it wasn't yours. It wasn't yours. It was your dad's.
And you encouraged me to do so. I'll have your listeners know.
Oh, great. So if he jumped off the bridge, would you?
Every time that's come up in my life, yes, I've jumped off the bridge.
One of my favorite retorts to that was the Smothers Brothers. And Tommy said to Dickie, so if he jumped off the bridge, would you do? And he said, not again.
Fantastic. Okay, here we go. The Maddie, we're getting down the home stretch here. The Maddie for best villain in a horror movie. And this relates to what we just talked about, Stuart Sink in the British Open. I think, Fred, your most frightening villains in movies aren't the ones with, you know, the grotesque features. It's always the villain who's smiling and that you kind of might think you like. And I think Stuart Sink had to be that villain. And it was just terrible to watch.
Jack Nicholson in The Shining.
Yeah, man. yeah. And Inglourious Basterds. I don't know if you saw that movie.
I'm going to.
The German Nazi, hunter of the Jews was played by this guy who just had the smile on his face. And he was likable and almost charming. And it made him so much more evil, and that's how I felt watching the British. I was like, wait a second,
everybody
I like
talks
Stuart
about
Sink.
That guy's performance.
It's transformative. Movie. It's absolutely transformative. It's an amazing thing. But this, you know, I'm watching Stuart Sink going like, I like Stuart Sink. Oh, I like him. He's so nice, but he's killing the dream. And it made if it had been Rory Sabatini or somebody like that, you could go, oh, I hate this guy. But Stuart Sink was all complex and my emotions were mixed because I liked the guy and I was rooting for him. He's kind of a journeyman himself in a sense. And it was just, it left me feeling blah, you know?
Oh, he didn't do anything. It wasn't his fault.
Crushed the dream.
Yeah, it wasn't his fault that he missed the putt.
He pushed it, as my father said. All right. Now we're in the big ones. These are the final ones. These are the big awards that everyone waits for every year. Yep.
Okay.
Still got the production skills, I see.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. The Maddie for Best Director. I think this is pretty easy. In 2009, I think it goes to Freddie Couples. He got it. He got what the President's Cup was about. He was smiling, laughing. The team was loose. Although I might add, I thought it was a little bizarre, and you can shed some light on this, Fred, because you were actually there. I think I might create a category in 2010 for inexplicable use of a celebrity, because I didn't get the Michael Jordan thing. You know, it's like, I understand he was a great champion, but there was something unseemly about him with an earpiece. You know what I mean? Like, let him walk around and follow the team. Okay, fine, because he's a figurehead. But, like, he actually was kind of taken on the mantle of, like, assistant coach in a way. And I found it
was his official title.
Yeah, I did not like that.
Jay Haas and Michael Jordan were assistant coaches to Fred Couples.
And let me tell you something. If I was Tiger Woods or Phil Mickelson and I got Michael Jordan whispering advice to me, if I was Sean O'Hare and Michael Jordan's whispering golf advice to me or anything like that, you'd probably have to bleep another F-bomb, Fred, because I'd be like, hey, Michael, This ain't the Cavs. You know what I'm saying? This ain't game five against the Cavs in 1993. Step away. I've got a swing here.
Well, what I found out, what I heard was that he really was there to get free golf.
Yeah.
Smoke cigars to piss off San Francisco officials. Because
nice.
There's no smoking allowed anywhere outside in San Francisco. And
yes.
Like the first day of practice, there's shots of Michael with a big cigar popping out of his mouth on the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle. And it's like, no, he's smoking. It's like, shut up. Jesus.
Yeah.
And, but apparently he did give a pep talk in the locker room to the team on Sunday morning.
Okay.
On the final day, he was there to give the Coach Wooden, not the 99-year-old Coach Wooden, but, you know, the Newt Rockne one for the Gipper speech. And not like they needed it. They didn't need much to win. It seemed in the bag on a Sunday. Oh, but look what we're talking about. Every major this year was in the bag on a Sunday.
True, it was.
And we haven't even talked about, well, yeah, we did the best shot of the year, but Tiger losing on a Sunday?
Yeah.
Unhoida.
Yeah. Yep. By Y.E. Well, yeah, I agree. You know, and that stuff happens in sports all the time. Athletes from other sports play some sort of motivational role. But it just got a little strange with the earpiece. And then he gave an interview in the coverage at NBC, which you couldn't have seen because you were there. But he was kind of like answering the questions as if he was in on the strategy and one of the coaches, you know. And I just found it a little unseemly.
Well, let's talk about the people who weren't chosen to be assistant coaches that were there following Tiger's entourage, right?
Isn't Condi Rice one of them?
Condoleezza Rice was there.
Now that's a girl who knows her golf.
Within a 30-second period, Michael Jordan walks by me on the right. I have my microphone. I'm trying to catch up with him to see if I can ask him a question. Nothing. And then as I'm like, oh, well, I'm not going to get my – boom. Then I feel like Madden. Boom! Condoleezza Rice drives by in a little golf cart. It's like, I can't ask her a question either. But my favorite, who did they not – one of the greatest baseball players of all time following on Thursday morning in the entourage behind Tiger, Barry Bonds.
Oh, my God.
Barry was following. People were like, hey, Barry, hey, Barry. And he just, like, kept walking, didn't talk to anybody, as he never does anyway. But no. Did he give any inspirational speeches?
Uh-uh.
Would you ask him to? No. He's good for the individual sports, except he played a team sport.
That's hilarious. Imagine if that got out, that Barry Bonds gave him the pregame speech. That would be fantastic.
He probably did to the international team. Oh!
Yeah. Oh, hey now!
Hey.
I just realized, too, as we were talking, that if I did create an inexplicable use of a celebrity last year, John Daly would have won for having John Gruden as his caddy. Do you remember that debacle when he had John Gruden as his caddy? So I think I will make that a category for next year. All right, the Matty, we're getting to these are the big ones now. The Matty for Best Supporting Actor.
Mm-hmm.
This goes to Chad Campbell, because I think everyone forgets the supporting actor Oscar winner every year. No one knows who it is. And I feel like at the Masters this year, he played that role to perfection. I think everyone forgets that he was the man going to win that tournament the whole entire time.
Yeah.
And then it just fell apart. And everyone talks about Kenny Perry blowing it and Angel Cabrera making that mundane par to win. But no one remembers that Chad Campbell was the story there.
That's so funny, because as you're saying Chad Campbell, I'm going, why are you talking about Chad Campbell?
See? See?
He wins the award. Yippee.
Wait a second. He was the third guy in that playoff, right?
Yeah, he was. Okay. I'm reading right here. It says, after a three-man, two-hole playoff with Chad Campbell and Kenny Perry at Augusta National to culminate one of the most exciting Masters in recent memory, Argentina's Angel Cabrera was the last man standing and the only man wearing a green jacket.
Yeah, and I remember it was like a foregone conclusion that Campbell was going to finally win one. He was just playing out of his head, and it's just everyone forgets. All right, we got three big ones.
Okay.
The Matty for Best Actor goes to Mr. Tiger Woods for his amazing performance in I'm Excited That I Won the FedEx Cup. I mean, this guy really seemed to care about it. You would think that he actually cared, you know, as if someone had The reality is, though, we all know that if someone came up to him and said, Tiger, you could have a major in 09, but you have to sacrifice the FedEx Cup and give it back. I think we all know that. Let's just say it wouldn't exactly be Sophie's choice, if you know what I'm saying.
Right. But it is worth – it did do one thing that set him apart from the rest of the planet. Winning the FedEx Cup and winning the $10 million, right? And is, yeah. That's an annuity. They don't get a check for $10 million, right?
I think he has to be like Kenny Perry's age before he can touch it.
Right, exactly. But so winning the $10 million put him over the top to be the very first billionaire athlete.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. It is amazing. And full disclosure here, Fred, I was at one time the FedEx caddy, which on the FedEx Cup website, I was the interactive caddy that would come out and answer your questions and have humorous rants.
I've seen that. Yeah, that was hilarious.
That was me. So I must say that so you don't think I'm shilling for the company. I'm now no longer with that, so I can totally rag on how stupid it is. But
I'm sorry. I'm sure you would much rather still be doing the gig.
No, this is more fun. You know, but it's just like, it's one of those things, you know, like Tiger Woods won only by 10,000 points. Who saw that coming?
Right.
You know, and the best thing he could, here's a tip for if you're designing an awards or cup chase of some kind. When the best thing that the guy who wins it can say about it is, and this is what he actually said, he goes, well, it rewards consistency. I'm like, you know, that ain't exactly, boy, I've wanted to win this since I was a boy. You know what I mean? Like, it rewards consistency. You have to have a math degree from MIT to figure out who's leading at any given time. And it's just so anticlimactic, isn't it? Am I the only one? Do people love the FedEx Cup? Am I way off base? I don't know.
It seems a bit forced. I think they're still trying to figure out, what the heck is this thing?
Right. Right. Yeah, maybe if they can, if there's a way that, I think what helped was kind of filtering it down to those final events, you know, almost like kind of trying to match what NASCAR does. Mm-hmm. And think that is a step in the right direction, but it's just still, well, part of the problem is Tiger himself. I mean, anything Tiger wins is somewhat anticlimactic. You know, you could say about any one of his victories, like, boy, Tiger Woods eked out another victory. Who saw that coming? You know?
Yeah, but it is. I mean, let's not take this for granted that we're seeing one of the most amazing bodies of work for a golfer over a career, because you know, how many guys can be in 17 events over 1 year, make 16 cuts, and be in 14 top tens?
And he had another amazing year. You're right. And everyone focused on the no major, but he was easily player of the year.
Well, yeah. And think about it, because he was a huge question mark when this season began because of his surgery last year.
Late start, and just another killer year. Just
14 top tens in 17 appearances.
That's amazing.
That's amazing. Phil Mickelson, just to give you a perspective on this, Mickelson had 18 appearances, made 16 cuts, and 7 top tens, and he was number 3. Number 2 was Stricker. Amazing. Stricker was 22 events, made 19 cuts, and 11. Half. He was the number 2 player of the year. Half of his appearances were in the top 10, where Tiger had 14 of his 17 appearances in the top 10. That's remarkable.
It's amazing. It's amazing. He's like, you know, it's like Byron Nelson. You know, it's just no one in his time is touching him. You
right.
know,
and Byron Nelson. We're just not going to see this.
Right, right.
In our adult life, I don't think we'll ever see this. In our dead life, we will. But
well, you set me up for the final award, Fred, very nicely.
Well, thank you very much.
Your skills as a host are continuing to impress me, as they do every time. You've segued beautifully into the moment of the year. This is the Matty for the moment of the year. I think this encapsulates 2009. I think people are going to be – I think this is the most controversial choice I made, because I looked at Tom Watson.
Can I give you a drum roll on this? Tell me when to throw the drum roll on.
Okay. All right. Here, I'll give you the cue. Ready?
Okay.
I looked at Tom Watson. I looked at Kenny Perry. I looked at some amazing things that happened this year. But there was – the award is the moment of the year. So I'm going to give the award to Fred.
Drum roll, please.
I'm going to give the award – to Tiger and Phil at the Masters this year, sitting on the 10th tee at Augusta National. I don't think I've been so excited about a major, certainly not on the back nine, in years and years and years, as I was that Sunday. I think people forget, because of what happened with Kenny Perry, that those guys were walking, Tiger and Phil were walking shoulder and shoulder down, I guess, the 11th hole on the way to 12 before Phil plunked one in the water. And the roars were back at Augusta, and it was Mickelson and Woods. Mickelson shot a frigging 30 on the front. I think people forget that too, which I believe was a record.
Yeah, it was incredible.
And Tiger comes back, birdie, ties him. And it was like a symbol of what could be if someone did challenge Woods. You know, it's like what we all were salivating for is like, yeah, Phil is going to start challenging him. And I loved what Tom Watson did. It was amazing. But it also kind of felt like lightning in a bottle to me, like almost not ceremonial, but it was just such a one moment in time at that one tournament, that one course, that you knew he's not going to go out and compete the rest of the year or any time after that. This to me was like what the PGA could be.
What the hell happened?
That was it. Well, Tom Watson came in and just threw a book at me because I didn't pick him for a moment of year. Get out of here, you old man.
Bitter old. I'm laughing through my tears. It was really such a beautiful moment.
I was on a good roll there, wasn't I? That was a beautiful ring.
Someone threw a book at you?
Yeah.
Shut up, Matty. You're going on too long. Who cares?
All right. Well, that's okay. Then let that be the end. So they were boring with me, Fred. You got to admit that. They were boring.
And what about, wait, I'm going to throw in one. Thank you, Matty B, for your wonderful efforts and incredible list. We truly appreciate it. And now for the addendum to all this, can you please give us your thoughts about golf coming to the Olympics in 2016?
I think, I'm glad you asked that. I think it is my favorite sports story, and I'm going to choose this carefully because I'm really trying to think. I think it's probably my favorite sports story in the last decade because, A, we just love golf so much. Every Golf Smarter listener loves golf, and I think it just is the perfect – if you like Ryder Cup, which is actually my favorite thing, even above the Masters, if you like Ryder Cup, I think this is going to raise it 10 notches. You know, I think
it's not going to be team play, though, is it? I think it's individual stroke play.
Is it really?
Yeah. I mean, shouldn't it be like gymnastics? Shouldn't there be team play and individual play?
Absolutely. I thought it would be a Ryder Cup type format.
I don't think it is. Because they announced it during the President's Cup, and I was in the media center, and I pulled out some information, and everything I read, it was like the last paragraph, it's going to be individual stroke play.
Wow.
And I hope I'm wrong.
Because
you should be playing for your country. These guys play for themselves all the time. So, ooh, I got a gold medal. It's like the FedEx Cup.
Hold on. Breaking news, Fred. We're breaking news here. So you're telling me that it would be like every man, like a normal tournament, and if you happen to be from Japan and win, then Japan wins the gold, and if you happen to be Tiger Woods coming second, then America wins the silver. It's not like Team USA basketball where you play in rounds against other countries. It would certainly diminish, I think, what I thought it was going to be. I really would.
Yeah. No, it should be a team sport. It should be.
Oh, I was about to say, my whole rant was going to be, it lends itself, it's because it's such an individualistic sport. This is going to be my little rant. Golf kind of lends itself to the individual format. And when you do it in an international team competition, it's heightened so much because it's normally not played that way. And to be able to root for a team of golfers and take it out of its normal context, I think it elevates the pressure. It elevates the excitement. That was my whole crux of my argument, was that the fact that it's going to be played as a team country event, and to have it just be like, well, everyone play and the winner gets the gold. Like, oh.
Okay, here we are. USGA.org news. Quote, based on player feedback, the IGF has proposed a format of 72-hole individual stroke play for both men and women. In case of a tie for either first, second, or third place, a 3-hole playoff is recommended to determine the medal winners.
I hate it.
Yeah. The IGF has also recommended an Olympic field of 60 players for each of the men's and women's competition using the official world golf rankings.
Oh, I hate it.
As a method of determining eligibility. The top 15 world-ranked players would be eligible for the Olympics, regardless of the number of players from a given country. Beyond the top 15, players would be eligible based on the world rankings with a maximum of two eligible players from each country that does not already have two or more players among the top 15.
I hate it, because here's the other thing it does. Here's the other thing it does.
It's the IGF whole, is the International Golf Federation. I'm sorry.
Okay, stupid IGF. One of the crux of the argument with the Olympics, golf going to the Olympics, which I love and still love, even though now it's all diminished for me, was you're going to build golf worldwide. If you don't let, say, Jamaica enter a golf team and get their ass kicked for 10 years, that's not going to build golf.
Right.
The only thing that's going to build golf is if you say, I got a chance to put a team of three golfers from Jamaica out there and compete in this huge 64-team round-robin event. Let's get some golfers. Let's play golf, kids. I think that's going to motivate them way more than watching Tiger Woods win three gold medals in the next 20 years, or Phil Mickelson, or Sean O'Hare. You know what I mean?
Like, hey, no, wait. Jamaica is not like, you know, getting an Olympic team for the Winter Olympics. Jamaica's probably got some players. I'm more concerned about Greenland than Jamaica.
There you go, yeah.
Although ice golf is pretty popular.
But you know, that's what happens with these sports, is that there's countries that don't compete in these sports, and they go, hey, let's work on this. And then you see them get better, and you see the sport grow in those countries. And that's like the whole spirit of the games. I think you're just picking players who happen to be ranked in the top at that time, and just pick it. So it's going to be four Americans clustered at the top of the board with two Koreans. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to repeat itself for the next four Olympics.
Yep. It says here that after an absence of more than a century, golf will return as an Olympic sport in 2016 and 2020, along with rugby sevens, followed by their approval. Think they should just, in 2024, they should combine golf and rugby sevens.
It might be
that'll
more exciting.
Be a new sport.
Might be more exciting than watching Tiger Woods win a gold. Oh boy! Wow, that's breaking news, Fred. I didn't know that, and it does. It changes. I think they're making a huge mistake, but maybe I'm wrong. You know,
I do too.
I do.
Gotta love the internet, though. That was
love
pretty
it.
Quick.
Well,
Matty B, thanks so much, buddy. That was a whole lot of fun. It was great to talk to you again, and look forward to speaking to you again throughout 2010. And we'll probably get together before the season begins. You can give your predictions, and then we'll wrap it up again at the end to see how good you were.
And may I plug real quick, the new MattyBlake.com, the new MattyBlake.com. That's MattyBlake.com. Check it out.
Oh, so it's not TheNewMattyB. It's just MattyBlake.com.
No, I'm sorry. That was me trying to add some drama to it.
It's drum roll, please.
MattyBlake.com. That's it.
Great to talk to you, buddy.
You're the best.
Oh, man, I enjoy playing with him. So the day, I mean, playing, talk playing, not just golf playing, that's... Boy, am I digging myself into a deeper hole here. So the day after we recorded this episode, a press release was issued by the PGA Tour that said, quote, Robert Allenby has apologized for his comments about Anthony Kim following their President's Cup singles match, and Kim has accepted, quote, While I feel like the comments published were taken out of context, I did call Anthony to apologize for anything that I said or inferred that could possibly portray Anthony as anything less than a professional to the highest caliber. He was a key member of the U.S. team last week and a formidable opponent on Sunday when we faced each other in singles competition. I am glad we had the chance to speak and clear the air. Mm-hmm. So I guess we don't have to revoke his Matty B Biggest Crybaby Award, but he has come clean. Just want to remind you that if you haven't taken advantage of our special offer for the Tour Tempo Micro Player, remember that conversation we had with John Novosel, now's the time to act, because the 30% discount offered to Golf Smarter members will end on December 31st of 2009. This is a really great training aid. I've been using it a lot, and it's helped me a lot. We've been selling a lot of them and been getting great feedback. So if you're thinking about what you can do to stay in tune during the off season, this could help a lot. Use the coupon code TTMP001, Tour Tempo Micro Player, TTMP001, and get one today for only $69.95 plus shipping. Normal price everywhere else is $99.95, but Golf Smarter members get it for only $69.95. And if you're overseas, we just got a shipment of international chargers, too. So remind me that you want me to send you the international charger, TTMP001, the coupon code. Also, as a Golf Smarter member, I got to believe that you've gone through your Dixon Earth golf balls that you received with your membership. As a member, you are eligible to take advantage of another exclusive offer of purchasing two new boxes of the first eco-friendly tournament quality golf ball and get a third box for free. Three boxes for the price of two. Great deal. So of every person who I've spoken with, I can only remember one who thought, they're okay. But everyone else really enjoyed playing with them, and that's the only ball I use. And now when I fill out stuff on the web, what ball do you use? They don't have Dixon Earth, so I fill it in. Oh, another benefit of being a Golf Smarter member is I like to give away things. So today I'm giving away the latest book by Catherine Roberts called Swing Flaws and Fitness Fixes, and it goes to Jennifer Dexter of Grand Haven, Michigan. Congratulations, Jennifer, and thanks for your continued support of the Golf Smarter podcast. Since we had a comedian on, I thought I'd end today's show with a cute story sent in by Bo Russell of San Rafael, California. He writes in and says, it was a sunny morning, a little before 8 a.m. on the first hole of a busy course, and I was beginning my pre-shot routine, visualizing my upcoming shot, when a piercing voice came over the loudspeaker.
Would the gentleman on the women's tee please back up to the men's tee, please?
I could feel every eye on the course looking at me. I was still deep in my routine, seemingly impervious to the interruption. Again, the announcement.
Would the man on the woman's tee please back up to the men's tee, please?
I simply ignored the guy and kept concentrating, when once more the man yelled,
would the man on the woman's tee please back up to the men's tee now?
I finally stopped, turned, cupped my hands and shouted back, would the a-hole with the microphone kindly keep quiet and let me play my second shot? If you have any questions, quotes, or comments, I'd love to hear from you. Our toll-free Google voice line is 415-448-6788. Or click on the Hey Fred button at golfsmarter.com.
Smarterpodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.